Blog Talk Radio.
Masonic Home Companion. For those who are sitting back with a cup of coffee and a nice cup of tea or whatever it is that quenches the thirst, this is a show that's intended to quench the thirst of the mind. Hope you're all doing well. And it's on this 102nd day of the year. Remember, getting your New Year's celebrations in mind, instead of just passively welcoming in the 2016, you have 263 days to get things ready. It's well overdue. I'm here to speak with the Masons about the things that we should be able to celebrate. It's about the condition of Masonry. And about some of the things that I want to talk about, the story, the real story behind the declining membership of the order. And this is, I think as I do it, I need to ask you for your help and guidance again, because today I'll touch on a number of different issues that are, I think, that require a thoughtful conversation, and in the spirit of gentlemanly discourse, I look forward to hearing what you have to say, your thoughts and ideas on this. This is really, with all due respect, addressed to the sensibility of a Mason. We have we've talked on Home Companion so many times about the different facets of Freemasonry and what it does to the life of man. What we don't know, and I think this is a bit of a hazard that we experience from time to time, is we don't seem to know enough about what inspired the men that we consider, you know, a Masonic icons. And I think we should even explore that kind of a notion. Have we been, the question I put to you, have we become a personality cult? Oh, have we become, you know, the flavor of the month? Well, you know, the work, if I've got this right here, you know that I tilt toward being a conservative kind of amazing. Yeah, I've declared to you that I'm an ancient. I have that, you know, I'll burst into flames around those moderns with their, variations on the theme. I like local traditions only, you know, I like the first, not yours. I like the first local traditions, just the way I'm built. Yours will come and go with you. I can guarantee they will come and go with you. When the big dog in the pack dies, his so-called local traditions will go with him. Guaranteed. What I'm looking for are the ones that are time proven. Those will endure. Well, we could add those every single day. This is a new local. This is my local tradition du jour, you know. So all I'm saying is you moderns have went ahead and done another innovation. I don't get it. I think there's a lot of people that just find it tedious. So I don't want to talk to those people that are, you know, just out there sort of wanting everything to remain the same. I have no interest. But I want to talk to about the scope of Masonry. If your ego needs to be constantly praised, that's we could say, well, on one hand, every human being likes to be noticed and appreciated. Yeah, we can appreciate that, I think. But what we're talking about here is the bigger man in the room. We're talking about somebody that doesn't need all the obsequious behavior, doesn't need to be having an exaggerated praise constantly laid out in front of him, that everything that he does is remarkable. The fact that he can remember three or four lines without having to be prompted is exceptional. Well, this is not true. If you see little kids listening to the way we talk, they'd wrinkle their nose and just think we're stupid. Truly. But, you know, oh, well, my goodness. Here I'm talking to a muscular, transformed group of Masons. The testosterone is oozing out the door. There's so much of it in the room. We are not able to talk about the emotional expressions of any of this. Because we can't even get our heads around what's going on intellectually. So we have to talk about things in a very concrete and functional way. Do you conform? Therefore, your thinking conforms. Well, my goodness, isn't that just lovely? We went back to the 30s and 20s. Remember when Spock was telling us about how to raise our children? So what would we do? We beat our kids. If they were annoying, we just beat them. We'd isolate them. We'd discipline them. A good spanking was all they needed. Whoa, 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 whoa. Remember what we started to discover in the 50s and 60s and 70s? Those little minds weren't stopping. They were just being suppressed. And we know that for a lot of human beings, this kind of upbringing caused some pretty serious distortions. Oh, my goodness. Everybody can say, well, you know, nobody really knows what I went through, and I sucked it up, and I did all right. Everything that we go through leaves a mark on us. Come on. If you think otherwise, you're a bit daft. That's where some of the principles of Freemasonry are so incredibly valuable. Are we just there to appeal to such fragile egos? Well, my goodness, doesn't that explain a lot about the condition of Freemasonry? We don't have any confidence. And when we get together, what do we have? A little pack mentality? That we march along this narrow path, and that if we vary from it, the point of Freemasonry then is you're telling me conformity? Where does it start and where does it stop? I don't mean I applaud some of these wags that stand up and take a shot at the craft in front of a whole crowd of people. I find that distasteful. I don't know about you, but I heard some wag the other day talking about the production line of Freemasonry. If that's all you could do, you could walk away from the experience of becoming a Mason. You're in a room full of men who have, for whatever reason, have given their version of a solemn oath, and they've undergone a process of obligation, and that's all you can do. It's been more than a little insulting. I just thought, I just discounted the guy. I said, well, you know, okay. You know, we don't screen out stupidity, so that's a stupid thing to say. Now, would I bring that up in front of a whole crowd? Everyone in the room is a mature fellow. He'll make up his own mind about it. It's not important. I'm talking about the way I looked at it. Maybe some of the people in the room shared it, and I think a lot do. I don't think it was a very productive comment. I don't think it was constructive, and it didn't add to the dialogue at all. And it's not a production line because we're talking about human beings. We're talking about a process. Is that like saying baptism or being taught your faith is a production line? So look at the mentality behind this conversation, behind that kind of statement. Is that like the tradesman graduating? That's a production line? Doctors being able to practice? That's a production line? See, it's like it's a ridiculously empty kind of a comment to make. Now, are we so fragile that we need somebody? All right. I don't want to believe that there's people that will enjoy Freemasonry just because they can dress up. And it's got little baubles and badges and things like that. I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that people are there simply because of rank, that they have this meager need to feel superior in some way. I've done more. You know, the competitiveness. You know what I'm talking about. So I can't, and I reject that. So this conversation has up to now has nothing to do with Freemasonry. I'm talking about the things that aren't part of Masonry. They're not Masonic. And then we have, and I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that grown men need that hyperbole. They don't need to have an exaggerated. You know, what in the world happened when you do a bit of work and it's good? What in the world, and it's expected, why do you need praise? Oh, well, you really did a great job putting that set of taps on that sink. There, oh, that's excellent work. Well, how many times do you need to say that? And if you're saying that over and over to somebody, you want to reexamine whether the guy's got anything going for himself? That's what motivates him? Well, then every day I'll give him a little set of affirmations, and he can read one. I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to be diligent all day. You hear what I'm saying? So I reject the idea that those superficial kind of elements are what drives people to Freemasonry, but I know it's happening. Those people are part of the cost of doing business. That kind of amazing is what floats up on the shore. It's a big ocean, and sometimes things break apart, and when you're walking on the shore, if you've ever had to, you know, I'm walking with my grandfather and PEI right now when I'm still a little boy, and we're walking along the shore, and I'm amazed at all the things. And he's well into his years, and he was so happy, and he would be laughing with me, and I'd be running back and forth and seeing all kinds of things and bringing it to him. It's like, what is this, you know? I didn't know there was a glass float, and it came from Japan, and that's where they make those kind of floats. So he knew that kind of, well, you know, who's not going to be impressed when you're a little kid? But the message was, after a while, you learn, well, there's other things that float up on a metaphoric shore. So all these types of guys, well, yeah, I think those have always been there. You know, there's no hostility or animosity between what's going on today and the order. It is in its purity. This is the mountain that Freemasonry climbs, and we're all part of that journey. Or I don't even want to challenge that. It's not a journey. It's not a journey. Listen to me. It's more. Here we go. Another leap of blind faith. We're going to talk to you about you being the sojourner. Okay? The sojourner is a person who resides temporarily in a place. Sojourner. Yeah. That's what I think we are. We have these temporary assessments where everything becomes true, and I'm thinking and understandable, and I'm thinking, what in the world preoccupies us so much? What in the world is so important about that? Why is that so vital to the it's sort of an ongoing? So if I said to you the journey really is a sojourn, it's a temporary environment. And then we string these temporary environments together, and then things become familiar. But it's not the same environment every single time. It changes. You change. The order is dynamic. So if we've looked at the history of history, you know, I tell you now, I've been doing this, and I did. I thought it was a well-received little talk the other day over in Barrie. And I talked about the history of history. You know, there was a time when we didn't have a sense of how to study history. This is called historiography, right? And it refers to both the study methodology of historians and the development of history as a discipline. So think about, there was a time when we didn't have this study. We didn't have it. the historiography of the specific topics, it lets us know how historians have studied the topic. And now you and I are, and our children just grow up and we take it for granted, right? Writing about history, historiographer meant a historian. We had the royal historiographer in Sweden in 1618, and in England in 1660, and in Scotland in 1681. The Scottish Post, by the way, still exists, just in case any of you are wondering what happened to them. But understanding the past appears in a universal, it appears to be something that all people need. And so we have to tell the story that's emerged independently of all in civilizations all over the world. What then? What constitutes history? Well, it's a philosophical question, isn't it? The earliest chronologies date back to Mesopotamia and ancient Egypt. But there were no writers in these civilizations that are known today. Some experts advise us that the tendency to extrapolate trends of historical patterns do not really align with expectations about the future. They don't. So we study the Hellenic world and Roman world and the ancient world, you know, ancient China and Korea and Japan and Christendom. But there was a time, and I'll try and tell you that, you know, depending on where you were in the face of the earth, here we go, this is like Columbus discovering America. Well, we sort of shut that down. It's like, so did it, was it in your neighborhood that we're talking about? Well, let's put blinkers on. But now if we get to measure the whole world and see, well, who did what when? Well, you know, all of those, when we're picking a period in history, way back, like 722, and I only mention that because it's the earliest Chinese work in the narrative history, 722 BC, right? We had to correlate those events with other things. So it's like you have to take it something that's going on as far back as we can confirm and relate those events to other events. So it's the context, known context. And the further back we can go using known context, it affirms that these dates are the dates are valid. And the more our historians have at it, the more accurate. Then we get down to, instead of a range, you know, that little C, like circa. So instead of a range, we come down to specific dates, or the range gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So that means we have to investigate this whole world. So was the Gutenberg press, was this like the first printing press? Well, yeah, okay, except the Chinese had it 1,000 years earlier. But no, well, we're not going to look at that, because that sort of uproots the narrative, doesn't it? Changes the narrative. So are we talking, if we're thinking in universal terms, then we want to think more broadly. We want to think more specifically. We want to apply history, if there is a human need, to what's going on today and compared to what we are taught had happened in the past. So we're taught to think that the men of the past, the men who created, the writers, the thinkers, it's not all male, don't get me. I apologize for that. That's just a slip of the tongue. It's not all male. I'm sorry. These ideas were purloined from women as well as men. It's the human condition. So let's get over that ego. You know, all boys are brighter and all men are better at doing things than women. Good Lord. Have we not got that? Have we not embarrassed ourselves enough with that kind of rhetoric? Thank you. So this is the work where we start to look at, we sort this out by adapting a field of philosophical life. So this is where we get into the ideas of Pythagoras. He tells us how to bundle this together. Well, why do you think Pythagoras is there? Why do we think we're talking about it? You know, you put him in the context of his contemporaries. Yeah, okay, it's Pythagoras. So why do you think of all of them, why do you think we're not talking about Antiphon or Aristotle? Why? Why do you think, is it simply because of the mathematics? Well, there were other Greek philosophers that, people with ideas that were talking about mathematics and talking about geometry. There was something, of course, unique about the Pythagorean school. I'm not going to get into that. That's, if you're esoteric, you like those teachings. We'll talk about that again in another point of view, in another discussion here. But what he was doing, what we do with that idea, is it enlightens the mind if you're curious. If you start to ask the questions, why? Now, I always love it when somebody comes out of this with that knowledge, as if that was the only way it is. Well, the wake-up call, there's always somebody that has another point of view. This isn't about right or wrong. It's about accuracy. All hail accuracy. So you come in with your engineers and say, well, this is the angle we need on that wall. Down, you know, if we're going to put this together, we need this angle. And somebody comes along the last minute and says, you know, if you put it up, I'm observing that, you know, it's likely to not work, to not meet your needs. And here's another part of the formula that you need to take into account. Wasn't that the first part was wrong? The first part was, the only thing that makes it wrong is in our head. Because we have this sense, right and wrong, wherever the hell that came from, instead of accurate. It's a building process. That's the scientific method. A building process. It's not like wrong. Oh, we had the analysis of electricity wrong, did we, in the 18th century? Well, you know, you keep saying that, and it really narrows life into a box. No serious-minded person would talk that way, frankly. Somebody is making a point of view. If you hear somebody that's talking about the world in those kind of terms, they're making a point. They're persuading. Facts alone are facts alone. On that date, this is the way we saw the world. On that date, this is the way we understood microbiology. On that date, this is the way we understood medicine. And life goes on. So the history is of the evolution. Now, I think masonry needs to let itself evolve. It needs to let itself move along according to, you think about the forces. We've been thinking about masonry as a governance structure. I think all too often that's what's emphasized. How do you think of masonry? It's ritual and it's organization. Well, it's a little bit more than that. There's a dynamic. There's some things going on at a molecular level inside of masonry. We need, now think about this. Masonry is impacted by these forces. And we don't always see them. We don't always understand them. You're in the laboratory in the early 18th century. Okay? And you know that there's some interesting work going on in the Royal Society, but you don't know all of the details of that. You know that we haven't formed the electric engine yet, the electric motor. You know that the connection between electricity, current, and magnetism hasn't been known yet. Are you wrong? Well, what's important for us, what's useful for us, is when we begin to examine how the information changed until we arrive at the position we're at today. This is not, we're not driving toward conclusions, because we know that everything, all of the science continues to evolve. All of it. All right? All of it. So that even the way that we blend science, that's the innovation. That's thinking outside the box. Think outside the lodge. Now, what forces, I'll ask all of you, you're a genius, you're brilliant, you have experience, world experience, I couldn't imagine. You're exceptional in so many different ways. And I'm not talking about every one of you that needs to be praised. Oh, you're an excellent human. You are what you are. You've got your history. You've got your aspirations. You've got the things that you achieved, your accomplishments, things that you're proud of. every day, night, when you put your head on your pillow, you're asking yourself, Jungian form here, to find the truthful aspects of your nature and character, the best parts of you, as you put your head down. Watch what it does to your dreams. Just go and try that. Oh, yeah. If you try it once, yeah, that's what works. Like getting in the car, you only practice that once before. Yeah, you think a couple of times. You want to achieve this kind of ability to steer your dreams. Practice it until you arrive at it. So you're that kind of character. You're that kind of mentality. You're impacted by different influences that have occurred around you, whether you were aware of them at the time or not. Think of take that metaphor, spread it out there to masonry. Now, what influences, with all of your experience and the differences in experience, will make this very interesting. Each one of you comes with a different perspective. Beautiful here. This is great. What forces, strong and weak and medium, have influenced the growth of masonry? Now, were those forces interpersonal? Think of the culture. You know, does our culture stay the same? Somebody could say, if you're looking at such a far level of abstraction, like you're looking up at the Milky Way and you're saying, oh, they're all little points of light. That, from that distance, from my eye to that distance, yeah, that's a fair thing to say. What does it mean? It loses a lot of its meaning, you know. So you are looking at this from different points of view. What influences? If there were culture, yes, we were influenced. We're influenced by culture. And does culture stay the same? Well, in some parts of the world, it tends to. But for hundreds of years, the culture on Prince Edward Island remained basically the same. It's on an island. And so the change from outside was slower. Okay, we weren't living in Central Europe where there was exchange. Battles were fought over top of our countries on layers, on layers, on layers. Invasions, you know. The exchange of information and ideas was occurring at a high and accelerated level compared to some isolated places in the world. And we tune in our television sets today. We're looking at people with value systems. They're struggling with them in the 21st century that, for us, relatively, look like 15th century stuff. It's like, you know, where do you pick that stuff up? That's not sensational. That was done a lot. You know, public hangings and beheadings. Been done. You know, you're putting it out there on television like it's, oh, gee, we're the big horror of the world. Really? Well, let me tell you. You look back in the common history, you're as limited as any of the others. You've not learned crap from our history. You've got your head stuffed in that hole, right? So give it a try. You know, teach the lesson. Show the world that this is how judgment is meted in your kingdom. Well, we know where that goes. And wherever that's happening, it's inevitable. It's going to be ending. It's not like trust me, trust history. I don't care how long it takes. I just hope, in a human sense, it doesn't take as long as the battles that my bloodlines fought over stupid and ridiculous stuff today. Listen to me. Today it looks stupid. At the time, it certainly wasn't. Church and king were running the world, eh? Yeah, the religion and the monarch were running my world. Feeling really good about that. You look at these forces. So what is the primary force, influence, the energy, the unseen, the magnetism? Let's say it that way, eh? Is it cultural alone? Well, maybe it was, because the people that wrote Freemasonry wrote the idea down. It was in their minds before it was written down. The people that wrote Freemasonry talked very sincerely about universalism. Well, that means there was an awareness. These weren't people that were living on a rock, unless they were particularly powerful philosophers, that they were Platonists that could see beyond the edge of the cave in their mind. In their mind. Remember, Freud was doing exercises and experiments in the mind. Einstein, a lot of his work were exercises in the mind. So unless these were the exception, how many of those folks exist? Well, hopefully we're teaching children so that if they have the inclination and the capacity, that they'll develop that skill. But we find that we may have, we certainly will say yes, it was one of the influences. It was the unidentified influence. Nobody has done this before, have they? Maybe we could say, you know, Alexander thought that he had conquered the known world, had he? You know, the known world. Well, we can say, yeah, okay. Because, you know, other parts of the world weren't heavily explored in the 4th century. They weren't, we don't have a lot of the detail. People were, you know, sort of traveling around trying to scrape an existence from the environment. Indigenous populations. So today we can look at it and say, well, the world, we've seen it. That's beautiful blue globe that floats in space. Well, he didn't know that. So we talk about this as always qualified, that there was an influence, and there is a cultural influence, and all those cultures change over time. All culture changes over time. And then we come along with people that want to preserve the best aspects. Well, it's not people that preserve the best aspects of a culture. It is every man in that broad literal sense. Every man, every person, within themselves, that core belief. And that core belief comes from achieving something because of the way we act with each other, a predictability and a harmony that doesn't exist without it. And you can find that harmony through different cultures in different ways. Oh, is the influence of ethnocentrism alive and well? Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been brought up with this culture, and so that's the only culture. And if anybody's doing something adverse to my experience, then it's wrong. Really? That's sort of what in the world happens when we get all these worldly buggers running around that have visited, and for whatever reason, they've gone and talked to other people. And they find that when they walk somewhere and they're the wrong color, or they're obviously their clothes make them stick out, what do they find? Is this reaction of people to them? You know, is it the paranoia? Is xenophobia? You know, if you go into where now we're seeing the old xenophobic battles being ripping up the Crimea. No, that's not new. That stuff's been around. Again, read your history. So here we can say, well, all those people, oh, they hate us. They hated me. They're going to kill me. Well, what you're looking at is the ugly side of that xenophobe. You know, we hear it with the sort of the disgusting rhetoric in some parts of the world where they just want to make things racially pure. You know, if we live within that racial purity, then everything is going to... Where do you get off of that thing? And it's a daft. There's no history that supports that anywhere. We've seen that despotism occur where people have tried that kind of experiment. And we see that they've lined up and everybody has a taste of, you know, you're already at the Kool-Aid. When you're thinking that way, you're already sitting down and you're in Jamestown and you're going to be, and you're next in line to sip the Kool-Aid. There you go. What brings about a preservation of the best aspects of your culture is in the minds of the people, the predictability. If you want to hate, go ahead and hate, but keep it to yourself. And don't show it in any of your behavior. If you want to be a moron, you have a right to be a moron. Nobody, we know that nobody can stamp that out. So we have to have police because there's morons. And then we have to have laws because there's idiots. And then we have to have some arms because we have to protect ourselves. Sometimes people do freaky things and we just don't know. It's like, hey, that's like a bag of hammers. Well, yeah, some stuff happens. It's like, you know, you get some dogs are just antisocial or psychopathic. They're dangerous. They have to put down. Well, with humans, we try to be a little more, you know, if somebody is really out of control, they tend to put themselves down. You know, what do we see? The suicide rates in young men is high. You know, they die of accidents and all this. Well, look at the mentality we're talking to. Is it culling the herd? Ugly, huh? Ugly term to hear, culling the herd. You know, we have epidemics. Oh, culling the herd. Unpleasant because it dehumanizes the process. Culture is in our minds. So we're that blend of cultures. You know, we're like this stew. We bring it all together, and then we're saying, well, once you bring that together, what do these people have in common? So we're going to give them some common language. And we do. We have a Masonic language. You get on board a deck of a boat, a sailor has a language. This is the one that I relate to because it's been part of my experience. You know starboard and port, bow and stern. You know these in every little aspect, every part on a boat has a term that identifies. You keep your eyes closed. Somebody talks to you and you know exactly what she's talking about, he's talking about. So we're given that kind of nomenclature in Freemasonry. So there's the common language. Parallel in history, science used to be in Latin. Why Latin? Because it worked everywhere in the world. Everybody wrote science in Latin. So if you were in Lithuania, let's pick one of the older cultures, oldest cultures, the oldest language still spoken on the face of the earth, Lithuanian, by the way. We're sitting there, and we're developing science. People in Paris can understand it. It's the common language. Common language. You know, then, you know, we did start to see papers made, religion progressed into the, and things were translated into common language. Common language. In a sense, you think we move away from the Latin. Common language means we have to translate. We get into different translations, different points of view. So then we have to be more careful because the translations may or may not be that accurate. And they're not necessarily inaccurate done with a malevolent a thought in mind. So pull it back then. What are we going to, what do we have in common with all these streams of people from various cultures and various experiences. So we create the common language, and then we want to have some uniformity. Well, you know, so we have symbols. We don't say everybody has to wear trousers. If that's not the convention in your culture, then okay. You know, what difference does it make? And we don't, if it interrupts with your time of worship, well, that's easy to change. All of the major religions have, in their orthodoxy, have those periods of worship from early morning right through the day. Again, it's been the lack of historic knowledge means that some of us are working with these deficits. We don't know. We didn't know. And, you know, in some faiths, they teach their children. Others, not so much. What else do we have in common? Well, we have an ability to reason. Universal. We're talking to the universal Mason now. We have a capacity to reason. Now, what are we going to reason about? Well, we're going to reason about the arts, the sciences. We're going to reason about philosophy of living, of being. The meaning of life, your purpose. your purpose, your meaning. Ah, now we see the common discussion, the common debate, the one that all reasonable minds can embrace. And Freemasonry creates that opportunity. It's the beauty of Freemasonry, is that it creates an opportunity. I think the narrative is a bit harsh in the Masonry, that we don't sit down with people and say and start to describe it in these kind of terms. It's more a trial and error. The sojourner. We have temporary understandings. And I think for a lot of young newcomers to the craft, and for people that are demitting, this is part of a narrative that's been missing. And it leaves them with an undesirable and unintended sense of frustration. To resolve that frustration, they leave. They step away. We take that person, whoever he is, and he's like he comes to us like an inflated balloon. And we increase the air pressure in that balloon for him, right? And we increase it. And then as the frustrations, the tease is that this is an enriched environment that you're in. We're not going to describe that enrichment except in very long-term perspectives. All those, look it up there in the middle, the Milky Way. All those stars are all the same. And then we leave them there. And I think the pressure in that balloon starts to leak out. Now, we could pump it back up. But we don't. We don't. And I think this might be either part of an impoverished aspect of the order, a part we haven't really thought through. How do we convey the essentials? Not the basics, the essentials of the order. How do we keep that apprentice on task? How do we mentor? What is universal mentoring? Well, I think that we can do it, and I think it's worth a shot. I think not so much because it might work. I think because it's been demonstrated through history that this is how we convey a philosophy. We have to teach it. Yes. So I think the distortion might have been with that one word, discovery. We don't really talk about that in Masonry. You don't hear that word used often enough, do we? You know, another word that I think one of those influences, unseen influences that affects Freemasonry is has to do with our faculty of imagination. We don't use that. We tap into it when we talk about the symbols. And you know my lament about the symbols in Masonic lodges. They're so stark. You know, tracing boards, like everybody's bought the same package and they think, oh, that's all there is. Good Lord. You're really, you know, nothing about the history of a tracing board and you're thinking these things are the way it is. Again, everybody has to conform. Oh, really? The ability to form new images and sensations in the mind that are not perceived through the senses, not perceived by what we see or hear. Imagination helps make knowledge applicable to solving problems. It's fundamental to integrating experience. A basic training for imagination is listening to storytelling, listening to the narrative. We're being taught this. So what are we doing? What are we doing? We're putting people in this little raft. We're saying there's a world of experience, but we're not giving them the paddles. Jeez. Well, that's, you know, again, this, I think, is the downside of what we call, you know, that muscular conversation among men. Everybody's got to compete. You know, you got the pack mentality going on. You got egos leaking all over the floor. You know, jeez. Masonry is old. And I think it's losing its, you know, it's losing a step. It's losing its pace. We can't function and stride today like we did when we were younger. We can do it differently, not necessarily worse, not necessarily lost anything, but we don't have the same pace. We're not as rash, but we still need to be able to encourage the rashness, because if we're developing the imagination, we're doing it. We need to be able to rely on a man's imagination to help him to problem solve the larger questions that he faces. Where do you hear this kind of conversation? You don't. Where do you hear these ideas being exchanged? Every single one of you has had this exchange with me, and probably with one another. How many of you out there are thinking, this is what I want to hear in a lodge? Well, a lodge has other business on the go, other priorities. We have to raise, this is a bit like the phoenix. Out of all, think of it, out of the ashes, there's always rebirth. And what happens with the phoenix? It doesn't die. It just goes through this metamorphosis, and then it relives and comes up very powerful, doesn't it? Well, the stories are important. That stimulates the imagination, I think, and in a kind of an interesting way. It's not like we have to make this up. In my heart of hearts, I keep thinking that this is such the shame of it. This is the beauty that isn't being shared. This is what I find is an interesting, why do we make masonry so difficult? Why? That we're driving, you know, why do I have this sense that we could take more minds, more cravings, more people hungry for this knowledge, and bring them to, and help them to achieve through their imagination what they can't achieve in other ways, through their senses. You look around, and what do your senses tell you about the sense of fair play in the world? The sense of innocence, sense of vulnerability. It would almost leave a good man thinking that the world is a terrible, terrible place. If that's the way you approach it, you'll not solve the problem. The phoenix is long-lived. It's regenerated and reborn. And it's associated with the sun. It always achieves new life arising from the ashes of its predecessor. You know, in early Christianity, for those of us that it was a symbol. Typically, it dies in a fire. It's in most versions. It simply dies and decomposes, and then it's born again. According to some legends, the phoenix could live over 1,400 years before being reborn. It could symbolize renewal in general, as well as the sun, the time, the empire, metempsychosis, consecration, resurrection, life in the heavenly paradise, the exceptional man. You and I aren't bound to avoid this. Masonry doesn't do that. We may find that when you start to open your cake hole and talk about things from a learned perspective, that there will be people in the room that will declare that they're offended by things they don't understand. That's the mentality of the masses. Greek history teaches us the wickedness of the masses and how easily it can be manipulated and triggered, how dangerous and destructive it can be. It's like when you talk to a person one-on-one, it's different than talking to 2,000 people. And it's different than being the provocateur. The arts makes those statements for us. Our cartoonists, in the literal sense of the term cartoon, our sculptors, our painters, can push the envelope well beyond what we can do. They'll allow a culture to examine contentious material without going to war, without killing. And it keeps these conversations in front of us, the things that we know to be true. The purpose of the king's fool, to say the things that nobody else could say, but everybody else was thinking, including the king. We can do these things. Reach out, though, to the younger minds, those people that you sense, and don't presume that everybody is on the same page. It's a choice. And if people are feeling some level of frustration or despair, that's legitimate. And we can kindly offer an explanation and align ourselves with them, more so that sticking our chest out and saying, well, suck it up, buttercup. This is where masonry, whether we do it or not, this is the compassion of masonry. Our philosophies allow us a worldview that is quite remarkable. It allows us to expand on ideas that are beyond the human condition, beyond the limits of me or you. So there's no competition. There's none of that sense of right and wrong or debate. I've lost the debate. It works if we all come to the debate with a purpose in mind, that it's sport, that it's lively and it's fun. It's like sitting down over a chessboard and emphatically wonderful experience. But the point of chess isn't the experience, it's to win. like the metaphor of sports. Think about it. I think this has some merit. I do. Today has been an exceptional day. We've been straying in Masonic Home Companion from some of the universal discussions. So I'll try and dedicate more of the programming to those discussions that will allow us to talk with the fellow born in Singapore, or the fellow born in Damascus, or the fellow born in Malahide, or the fellow born in Cavendish, or the fellow from Springbank, or from Tennessee, from Nashville. What is it that we have in common? Well, we'll know if somebody is not interested and they don't like that kind of a conversation. You'll see it. They'll steer away, they'll wrinkle their little cute little noses, or they'll try and make it ridicule or mock. You see this in masonry, I see this all the time. It's like schoolboy stuff. But when we're grown men, it doesn't really serve a purpose anymore. It's just a bit embarrassing when you identify it for what it is. So consider yourselves then more like the peripatetics, that wandering philosopher, never sitting down, never developing bricks and mortar. I think masonry in some ways is peripatetic. Ooh-ah, we can have a lodge in a far and distant land. Ooh-ah, we've always done that. We've always done that. And we can hold lodge in very dangerous circumstance. Or what do you consider dangerous? A lodge in inner city Detroit or a lodge in Kandahar? I don't know. Tomato, tomato, as far as I can see. Unless you've been in, I haven't been to Kandahar, but I have been inner city Detroit. You know? Anyway, I hope you're all doing well. I hope this has made some sense, and I hope that I've brought out the dialogue that you've taught me about, that's been on your minds for so very long. I'm moving more toward, overcoming the destructive emotions. I'm trying to live more of a stoic lifestyle. And this was based, funny. We'll talk about that again. We haven't done that for a little while. Talk about how the Stoicism is built on the ideas, the ethical ideas of the Cynics. Teaches us that the goal of life was to live in accordance with nature, to develop self-control and fortitude by overcoming those destructive emotions. You remember, Stoicism was the most successful school of philosophy until it died out in the 3rd century. The Epictetus, Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, you've heard those names. Chrysippus, Cleanthes. I'll see you see you next week. I think I should. We'll get 1 week closer to New Year's. We'll be coming 1 week closer to the summer solstice. I want you to enjoy. The Creator is being kind to us. He's baking our land around in fantastic warm sunshine. Wherever you are, I hope you are in a good state of mind. I hope that you find the discussion, if you're arguing and throwing things at the computer screen now, whoa, good, let's have it. Let's talk. I live in a world of very clever people. I never claim to do anything, have any original ideas. It's just remarkable existence. We're here in remarkable times. Thanks for joining me today. I'll look forward to being with you again real soon. Here's a little tune you might like.
Thank you.